Good afternoon. I'm Rhonda Fineman, and welcome to Healthy Options on WERU Community Radio. Our guest today on Healthy Options is Marcy Cottrell Houle. She's a wildlife biologist and author of 7 books. 2 of her books, The Gift of Caring and Wings for My Flight, have won the National Christopher Award for books that affirm the highest value of human spirit. Other literary awards include the New York Times Best Book for Earth Day and the New York Times Notable Book for The Prairie Keepers' Secrets of Zumwalt. The Oregon Book Award, New York City Library's Best Books for the teenage, and the Oregonian Best Book of the Northwest. We spoke with Marcy Cottrell Houle on Healthy Options a few years back about the book she co-authored with Dr. Elizabeth Ekstrom, The Gift of Caring, Saving Our Parents from the Perils of Modern Healthcare. Well, they've collaborated once again on a new book, The Gift of Aging, Growing Older with Purpose, Planning, and Positivity. And that is why we've invited you back here to discuss this book and to learn about all things Gift of Aging. Welcome back to Healthy Options and WERU Community Radio, Marcy Cottrell Houle. So glad that you could join us again. This is very exciting that this book has come out. I think it's so relevant for everybody, because we've been aging since we were born, haven't we?
Yes. And, you know, I think for a lot of us too, as we get older, we want to keep our heads in the sand and pretend it's not happening. And that's really not the wise thing to do, as I've come to learn, especially working with Elizabeth Ekstrom, who's the aging known worldwide for all of her research and clinician work with older patients. So I think a lot of us want to know, what is normal aging when you're 70, 80, 90, and 100? And what isn't? And are there things you can do to have the most optimal results, so when you get to 100, you're still living with meaning and joy?
Yes, and I think here I'm going to read from the text on page 8, right here in the introduction. Dr. Ekstrom she's a gerontologist, isn't she? Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. So, and you'll talk about your own experience with getting a little taste of this in a second. But she talks about, and so do you, that aging, it's not a direct line. It's really a process, and that is really important to think about, that it's not like one day you're quote whatever you think of as old, one day that happens. No, we're always changing and adapting, and those are the things that we can take with us as we move forward. So it's really that there's no one straight line. Aging is a continuum, a process, says Dr. Ekstrom. And you say that too, that with your experiences, which you'll tell us about, there it's not a vague intermediate quest or journey. It's really all about living. So tell us how you came to write this book with Dr. Ekstrom.
Well, after we finished Gift of Caring, that is still being read so much today, because it is such a problem as we get older, how our health is managed. Excuse me. But we thought we wouldn't write another book. And yet something happened. This is just right before the pandemic, I had a fall, a dumb fall. I'd been hiking, but I had a fall and I broke both of my arms, which is really kind of odd. You know, you can break one arm, but I broke both. So I became really incapacitated. And plus my face was all blackened too, because I hit my head. Ooh. And so I looked like a freak, but also, you know, when you break both of your arms, you can't do anything. You're really helpless. So John, my husband, took 3 weeks off to help, because you can't tie your shoes, you can't open the door, and you can imagine what else you can't do. Can't serve yourself food, whatever. And it made me realize, is this what it feels like to get old when you're so incapacitated? And I knew I was going to get better. And I did, you know, fairly rapidly in a couple months. But I thought, is this what I'm going to feel like? I don't want to feel like this. I'm such a burden to everybody. And I can't do what I always wanted to do. And it was very depressing. So it made me think, going back to Elizabeth, are there better ways we can age so we don't end up like in this state. And she said she'd had so many questions about from Gift of Caring about health issues. And as they say, what is normal? What is not? What can you do? So she said, okay, we'll write another book. And in the meantime, she'd spent a year on a sabbatical going to places all around the world that where people are aging really well. You may not be familiar with blue zones, those places that have been identified that people live to be 100 and relatively good health, very little incidence of dementia, and trying to figure out what is the difference.
So you've met some extraordinary people along the way. So let's start there. And I think these are some of, could even be some of Elizabeth's clients, if I'm not mistaken. So tell me what was your first introduction into writing the book? Who did you spoke with many people, but what impressed you?
She wanted me to meet one of her patients at first. And maybe I should back up to say this book is really divided into four parts. And it really isn't just for when you're old. It's really for when you're in your 20s and 30s, because as she has states too, what we do when we're younger will play out immeasurably when you're older. So people are giving this to their children, and sometimes they think, why am I having this book? Because I'm only 30 or 25. And it's like, no, it's a big deal, because what you do now is going to play out when you're 90. But one of the first people she wanted me to meet was a rabbi. He was 96, Rabbi Josh Stamfer. And he, when I came in to meet him, he was in a wheelchair. He had a caregiver. And I thought, well, you know, hello, and looked like nicely dressed. And I expected him to shake my hand kind of feebly. I mean, that was my bias.
You had your own bias.
Yes. And he had the strongest handshake you can imagine. And he was just, so he had just come back from teaching. He still taught at the university 3 days a week. And it's like, oh my goodness. And so he made me realize from the start that there are different ways to get older. You may be in a wheelchair. You may have some health issues, but it doesn't mean that you can be not have a real purpose in life. And I just, one thing he said to me, I remember early on was the importance of living with joy and purpose. But he said, you don't want to just make sure as you get older that you're just going to enjoy life. There's a goal higher than joy. It was like, what? I thought that, what does that mean? You know, isn't a joy a high goal that we all kind of want? And he said, no. He said, it is the higher joy. The goal of my life is to improve the lives of others. It's hoping to instill morality, ethics, and goodness into life and to make our world a little better for everyone. He said, we take care of ourselves by taking care of others. And he talked about then the joy comes when you start living for others. And as he did, and in his teaching and in his work, he, even though he'd lost his wife of 65 years, and, you know, people do go through loss as they get older, but he still said life had held so much meaning and so much joy, but the joy wasn't the principal thing he was after. The principal thing was to help others, and then the joy comes.
So I think what we're making a distinction here is about being an elder, about mm-hmm. being an elder and what that means. And you can talk to some of the other people you spoke with about this. What is the responsibility of being an elder versus elderly? What is our mindset, or in our culture in particular, where do we value the elder? Do we value getting older? What did you learn, and what do we know? I think everyone who's, all of our listeners will have an opinion and an experience possibly about this, whether it's themselves or through parents or grandparents, about how they've seen their mm-hmm. relatives and themselves treated. So elder versus elderly. Yeah.
Well, as Bill McKibben, who wrote the foreword of this book, said, you know, nobody wants to be thought of as elderly as you get older, but we should all want to be thought of as elders. That's not valued so much in our culture, unlike maybe indigenous cultures, that we get into that in the book. But it's really true. It's like, you, as you get older, one thing that's, and it's rampant worldwide, is what's called ageism. And that is, we are very, very, we look at people who are older, and we look even at ourselves as we get older, that we are having deficits. They were losing, and we're not taken seriously because of our age. And actually, even health professionals can make this mistake. They can write you off as being, these symptoms you have is because you're old, when it may not be that at all. It could easily be the drugs you're on. So you just have to recognize in our culture that being older is a deficit. A lot of times marginalized people. And yet, what's very interesting, what science is showing, a big study was done at Yale University that showed if you have a more positive image and self-perception of aging, you can live 7.5 more years of life. Yeah. And so it's like Elizabeth says, there's no drug that can give you 7.5 more years, but just having that perception that trying to get rid of that stereotype of ageism. And that's hard because our culture is so steeped in it, but you just have to, when you have a positive view of aging, you have less chance for dementia. You get over injuries a lot faster. You have improved mental health. But too many of us think of aging as a loss. We believe that aging leads just to disability and frailty, that we'll be robbed of our creativity and our work. And after a certain age, you fill in the blank, that all the contributions you make will be through. Thing is, that is not true. That's very discriminatory. And we have to realize and fight against that. Fight against the jokes. Fight against the whole idea that aging is just, we're old and we can't contribute, because that's absolutely not the case.
So if you have just tuned in, you're listening to Healthy Options right here on WERU Community Radio. I'm Rhonda Fineman. We're speaking with Marcy Cottrell-Houle, co-author with Dr. Elizabeth Ekstrom of The Gift of Aging, Growing Older with Purpose, Planning, and Positivity. Well, Marcy, I think you've delineated many of the parts of your book that you go into great detail about. So let's break this up a little bit. So this idea of being an elder is being acknowledged for all of the experience. You know, people have talked about they have many layers of understanding, and therefore they can listen better and teach better. Did you find that most of the people there are a whole, what we call the super agers here, and are moving from that place?
I think so. Everyone I spoke to, we've kind of selected. I would go and I'd interview older people. I'd ask them really difficult questions. For example, somebody who was an artist who said there was a lot of meaning, and she was close to 100. How can you say life has meaning and you have joy when you lost your husband, and even worse, you lost your son? And so it wasn't like it was sugarcoated at all. It was like these people have gone through loss. And a lot of the people that I interviewed came from all walks of life. One escaped the Holocaust and talked about adaptability. Another was a refugee in 5 different countries. Bob's Red Mill, of Bob, we all like that food. He went bankrupt 2 or 3 times. And these people went through hard times. And they, even when they aged, they went through hard times. And yet, what got me was that they said they loved life. They felt they had a purpose. They had a vitality that I envied. And so those were the secrets that I wanted to find out. So half of the book, of course, is Dr. Ekstrom talking about what science says is normal aging and strategies we can put in our own lives to age really well. And so the other half was these stories of these people that had very amazing, not easy lives by any means, but had come to this part of their life, this chapter in their life, with that I was just almost envious of.
Well, I want to. We'll talk about some of the science. Unfortunately, Dr. Ekstrom is not available for right here, but we have her in the book, yeah. And we'll talk about all of this. But what I wanted to say, it's reminding me of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's work. Some people may know her. She was one of the first many people who started to discuss the stages of grieving or the stages of being ill or accepting grief. And one of the stories she talked about, I believe, was the sense that some people get a diagnosis, a scary diagnosis, and then feel, okay, I have to do what the doctor said. I only have 6 months to live. And then other people will get the diagnosis and say, well, wait a minute, I have other things to do. And then even though they may, you know, they may be more ill than the person who died in 6 months, there is that other sense, there's something else that's happening that's in people that mm-hmm. allows them to have this resiliency. And I know Stephen Levine and Andrea Levine also talk about this kind of thing in A Year to Live, their book, A Year to Live. And the reason I bring those up is because grief is what you mentioned, how can I survive these things? But people do, and they have that resilience, this sense of there's more to me than the diagnosis. There's more to me than the grieving. And I think you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I think so much of what I saw in almost all the people I interviewed, as I said, they all had different stories, but I think they all felt a sense of purpose. And Elizabeth talks about that. We want to wake up in the morning and feel, I've got to get up because I've got this to do. And that makes a big difference. If you wake up and you feel, you know, shut out or lonely and not looking forward to the day, that can be very detrimental. The one good news I'll say is, you may think, I'm not a positive person, I couldn't go through this, but science has shown us that right in front of me in the book, but 40% of what we have the ability to change. We can change our thinking about things. We don't have to just be wallowing always in a sense of depression and grief. Grief is important though. And there's a whole section in there about dying and grief and going through what that means when you feel like you've lost the most important person in your life. It sounds to me just absolutely terrifying. And yet meeting some of these people who went through that and how they survived it and how they still are very active today and have made their life full of purpose. So it's almost, I like how Elizabeth, what we do corresponding chapters. I will write the story of someone. And a lot of times she'll come in the next chapter with the science behind it and strategies you can use to try to bring these things into your life. So it's great. It's very practical and very evidence-based, very scientific, but with the human element of the wisdom and the insights that I find really fascinating. And as you say, grief and loss accompany us as we get older, and they accompany us throughout life. But I think having a purpose and having a reason that you are needed here right now, it's a gift. And recognizing no matter what age you are, as we get older, these extra years are gifts that we can use. We can use to help our hurting world.
That's right. And that's part of eldering, isn't it? I want to talk a little bit about what you mentioned about grieving, because that does come up so often. You know, how can I go on? Or how do I adapt to what I've experienced? And one of the things that Elizabeth does talk about is about how normal that is. And how there is that process and there are stages, and that even the people, and you can maybe remind us of some of the people that you spoke with and their experiences, but how they didn't forget, even when they could smile again or laugh again, they never forgot what they lost, but then they were able to make a shift. Mm-hmm. And it's that's the human resiliency that is possible. Yeah.
Yeah. you know, I come back to more and more that whole idea of resiliency. And especially, I think, again, in today's world, because young people too, are facing lots of grief and loss, looking at our world ahead and what they're facing. So it's like, how does one develop a resiliency to keep going? And I think a lot of these elders showed me different pathways. And so actually, how I've kind of made the book is, and you'll see on the cover, it's of a mountain. This idea, because I'm a hiker, backpacker, have been for years, nature girl. And this idea of climbing a mountain and finding the right trail to try to reach that top of that mountain. So every bit, we're kind of like making a map. And I got keys about trails to take from Elizabeth, from some of the older people, trails to avoid, where would be the dangerous trails, and kind of try to climb this mountain of understanding, which I liked seeing it that way. And there's just, but grieving, yes, that's going to be part of it. But Elizabeth talks about the stages, and everybody's different, and it's okay, but it's just, it's important process.
Well, there's no right or wrong way to grieve, is there?
No.
No. And yeah. So, you know, one of the things, and a lot of the people that you speak with in the book, as you said, the rabbi was in a wheelchair. People mm-hmm. did have things, and that inevitably things mm-hmm. are going to change with mm-hmm. our bodies and our minds. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the things that struck me so much is that when we're talking about physical changes, our brains are meant, they do change. The brain tissue shifts. Myelin, the coating on our neurons will shift. And I think it's called, last in, first out. This idea that we won't remember the last thing that happened, but we might remember long-term things. And really, the remedy for that was... Well, natural things are going to happen. So what do? We exercise was one of the things. Sleep is so incredibly important. As they talk about removing the beta amyloids, that's what are those toxins that can cause dementia, by getting sleep, noticing all of these good things, hearing. If you are not able to hear, get the hearing aids. Definitely get the help that you need, because that changes the brain if you're not hearing. I wanted to talk about what you did, the idea of ageism in the medical profession, which you mention quite a lot in The Gift of Caring about, you came into that. But this idea that if you're a certain age, often you may not be getting the test that you need. You may not be getting the actual treatment. Sometimes you want to go in and say something like, okay, I have this, pretend I'm 40. Mm-hmm. And what would you do versus me being 75 or something? You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that goes back to the whole idea of Gift of Caring too, going through that with my parents and just seeing, but doesn't matter who you were earlier, because my dad was a very well-known surgeon and did all sorts of volunteer work. But when he got older and got Alzheimer's, you're just a head in the bed. And same with my mom. And a lot of times, physicians, unfortunately, a lot of them are not trained in gerontology. It's the primary care, which is so important, but there are not enough geriatricians. There's the payment's very poor compared to other specialties, and they have to know so much. It isn't just a one-shot deal. It's like they have to look at everything. It's an hour visit to really assess what's going on and to talk about how your mental health is. And there's so much. That's why the patients Elizabeth has just love her, and they do well. But trying to find a geriatrician, good luck right now. And it's going to get worse. So that's why I think books like this, Elizabeth really wanted this information out there so you can have some control yourself to know what you're looking for. Because many times you get written off to say, okay, we'll just give you another drug for this. And that drug, many of the drugs are not tested on older people. So, and also older people take the most drugs. And there's a very interesting statistic of that if you take one drug or two, you know, probably don't have a side effect. By the time you're taking five, you're going to have side effects. And a lot of those can be confusion, tiredness, depression. And so there's a thing we write about in Gift of Caring, and I have not seen it anywhere else in any other book aside from medical literature. It's called the Beers List. This Dr. Beers put together, and with geriatrician's help, all the drugs that seniors or all of us are put on and why they're keys of why they can be dangerous. They should never be put on. And it tells you the side effects. And so these are things you can, once again, take to your doctor and you can say, this drug X is on the Beers List. I'd like a safer alternative.
And that's B-E-E-R-S list. Yes.
Because so many of these issues get written off as just you're old. And as I mentioned with my mom, I remember going in to see, finally she saw a geriatrician and she had some health issues. She was 90. And I remember going in the room and I saw the doctor crossing off all these drugs she was on. It's like, doesn't she need these to stay alive? She's like, no. Mm-mm. And so saw quite a difference. But
and it made a difference in her and how she was in the world.
Very much of a difference. And so recognizing the value that geriatricians give us is so important. I would love to see a whole national movement saying older people have value. We need more geriatricians, but that's not going to happen. Wish it would. But yeah. Arm yourself with this information, and then you're able to advocate for yourself and for your loved ones.
So the first thing you can ask for is the polypharmacy. You can get a pharmacological review of mm-hmm. even if you don't have a geriatrician, mm-hmm. You can, you know, ask for that to look at how all of these drugs are interacting and what that means. I'm noticing that talk a little about one of the experiences with Susan's mom. Talk about Susan's mom, the woman that you interviewed, Susan. Can you remember that? Because she really epitomizes a lot of what you talk in the book. She's active. She, right to the end, active, really took control of her finances and her, you know, we'll talk about all this, but just let's set her up as a really great example of someone who brilliantly navigated her system.
Yeah. She did not want to go to the hospital. She made sure she, didn't want to go. She called it, I don't want to go downstairs, because she was in an assisted living facility. And she saw her neighbors when they finally went downstairs, because, you know, they sometimes have different levels. They never came back up again.
But there was a more level of care.
Yeah,
that was right. So if you got to the more level of care, you never came back. It's like science fiction.
I never want to go downstairs. And she was determined. Her daughter, Susan, of course, was a physician at OHSU. And actually, Elizabeth was her doctor, too. And so she wanted to be treated at the facility, did not want to go into the hospital, knowing there's so many things that can happen when you're in the hospital. And she made some changes. She adapted. She was in a beautiful home where she had lived for years. And you've got to move. You've got to have some kind of care. And then she said she found out she loved it because there's such a community there and she wasn't isolated. And then she, what does it say? She said, in 2.5 years, my mother suffered 3 heart attacks, several mini strokes, a major stroke, a 1.5-inch laceration of her scalp, severe angina episodes at least once a week, and a broken ankle. The amazing thing is, not only was she never admitted, she never set foot in a hospital. So it's an interesting chapter to read. How did she do it? How did Dr. Ekstrom work with her to keep her from never having to go downstairs, even until she died? And she kind of predicated her own death. She knew they had a thing at Christmas where all her family would come together. And she had that and then died peacefully at this certain time. It's amazing.
And on Christmas Day, she was surrounded by her family after they sang and did this. She also, you know, the idea of isolation. Let's talk about that for a moment. Mm-hmm. We know that is actually even more detrimental to all of our health, to any age, I would think, than smoking. So how do we not stay isolated and go? Yeah. Speak about what you learned.
Absolutely. Well, what I thought was interesting was studies show that, first of all, Surgeon General has said we are a very, very lonely nation. Doesn't matter what age we're at, we're lonely. At any moment, one out of every two Americans is experiencing measurable levels of loneliness. And it's just endemic, racing through like a pandemic through our own society. And the problem is older adults who experience social isolation are as at high risk of dying as those who smoke 15 cigarettes a day. Mm. Same thing. Yeah. So it is really bad. Millions are experiencing and have grave consequences with isolation, deteriorates to mental health, your physical health. You risk anxiety and depression, risk heart disease and dementia and a stroke. It's as bad as I said, smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And so once again, how do we rebuild our connections to each other? That's huge. Very important as we get older. And one thing, going back to Josh and what I kept hearing for so many.
That's the rabbi we spoke of earlier.
Recognizing helping people is one of the most powerful antidotes to loneliness. Help others. Mm-hmm. Volunteer, you know. And once going back to Rabbi Josh, I remember thinking, well, what if you get older and you think, well, I don't have any skills. And he's like, no, you do. You think back kinds of skills you have and you can build on those. And here was this man in a wheelchair that looked frail, but he wasn't. And what he was trying to do for the world, he'd spent time in Russia and China and did so much as a rabbi and helping people around the world. And he still was, but he said, I have to have something to get up for, you know, and I think those are things to think about as we get older.
So often we talk about aging in place as a goal and it can be. Right. Mm-hmm. So there are things that in order to do that, there are different stages again. So one has to be adaptable. How do you make your home a place that you can age in? What is required? So do you need, even if you don't need them now, are you going to need a first floor mm-hmm. apartment situation? Mm-hmm. Are you going to need handrails? Are you going to need something, even if you think you never will? But
right.
Yeah. But just a little bit of business here, because if you've just joined us, and we'll continue with this, we're speaking with Marcy Cottrell-Houle, co-author of The Gift of Aging, Growing Older with Purpose, Planning, and Positivity. I'm Rhonda Fineman, and you're tuned to the Healthy Options program right here on WERU Community Radio. So part of adaptability is, okay, so I love this. What's the best place to age? And we have a whole chapter about Sweden where you could actually call someone. You've already paid into the system. Someone will come and put in the handrails. Someone will change your light bulbs. Think about that. What a respectful thing in a society to go, well, we may need this. Yeah, yeah. So what about adaptability?
That was a large one that the woman I interviewed, Lily Cohen, she wrote about adaptability, and she saw as people got older, they either continued thinking, I don't have to adapt, I'll keep my head in the sand. And sometimes then they had the worst problems of all, and others understanding that I may have to adapt. And let's look at the different options. What's best for me? And really think about it and not shy away from it. And even Elizabeth talks about, there's going to come a time probably you aren't going to be able to drive, and just accept, you know, be a little more accepting and adapting helps. It's things in our country, unfortunately, in America, we don't treat our elders very well. As you said, in Sweden and these other places where the system's already set up, I think it's like 90% of Swedes live their lives in their own home. Well, that's not going to happen here because we don't have those services that are there and doctors who are there. And one thing I noticed was interesting about Sweden and some places where doctors got rewarded by not putting them on drugs, you know, and so very different than here where everything's pharmacopoeia. Let's have this drug, this drug, this drug. Yes. So we're in a different situation. And that's why I think it's important recognize what we're facing and what we can do and start young. You can jump in anytime. Elizabeth said 80, 90, or 100. But the younger you start, the more you're aware and the more you can keep your brain healthy through life, all of those things will be beneficial. But some people have better. They talk about a lifespan and a health span. And we have now, we live longer than ever before in human history. Okay, so that's your lifespan. The problem is we don't all have a health span that matches that. You might live to be 180, but you may start getting sick at 65. So your health span is not matching your lifespan. What you want is to bring them together. So you are healthy for the most part until you reach your lifespan and then you die and not spend years, withering away in a nursing home. But that takes work. And as Elizabeth talks about, these things that we do in terms of exercise, diet, community outreach, working on different things for our mind, they're not easy. They're not easy. But I think once we recognize what the power within them to age well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm thinking many of us feel this at any age. I don't feel like going to the gym. I don't feel like taking the walk. But actually taking the walk, you'll notice perhaps more energy. You'll actually feel better. So it's a lot of our mindset of negativity can actually get in the way. And I know we know about mindfulness practice. We know about breathing. We know about, it's being written about. We know about Tai Chi, which is something that deals with all of the energetic meridians, yoga, things that actually can also be done in a wheelchair, can also be done sitting. So there are ways to adapt. And as we get back to that adaptability, this is something from the book about adding that 7.5%, 5%, 7.5 years to your life. I love that 0.5. I actually would like 0.7 more years, 7.7, but okay. So the ageism, right? Getting the healthcare you need, the whole idea of isolation. All right. Mm-hmm. So if it's hard, some people, I'm not a joiner. I don't really want to be around people. That is actually, are you depressed? Do we need to treat you for depression? Mm-hmm. Is there something that could be helpful? Mm-hmm. This is where a geriatrician,
right,
would be of use. Wow, do you have a friend you can talk to? Do you have, or maybe where you're living is not exactly where you should be. So we have a whole idea here of staying positive about age will increase your lifespan. Never consider a health or mental problem the result of normal aging. Mm-hmm. Do not socialize. Make younger friends. I like that. So the assumption that they won't die before you, but we never know anything, do we? But and spend time with kids.
Right. So all those things are important. And one thing to talk about in the book too, that spending time in nature is huge. It's a healer. It can really, really help our outlook and our health. And the science shows people who are connected to nature are happier. They report more positive life satisfaction and they have more, I love the word, vitality. That's what we need when we get older. We need vitality. Nature gives us that. And they say that just 1 hour spent outdoors in a natural area or in a garden positively affects a person's performance of their activities of daily living. Those are your ADLs. What can you do? So it's really a big deal. And so people say, what do I do if they're stuck in a nursing home? Well, then you try to maybe take them on a drive or take them out or put some flowers in their room or put them in a window where they can see outside. That green and blue, water and trees and flowers really can make a difference in our mental health. And so that's something to keep in mind. And I think science, this was interesting, that people who had a lot more connection to nature when they were young and middle-aged age better later. They can pull those memories with them as they grow old. So we talk about that in the book, about the importance mm-hmm. of keeping connected to nature.
You know, I have a friend who will always, she is a health worker as well. And she always talks about every cell is listening. Every cell is listening. And so this sense of attitude and the sense of memory, every cell, if you're saying, nah, I don't feel like it today, every cell is going, ugh. All right, we're not listening. We're not, we don't care. But if you go, I don't feel like it, but I'm doing it anyway. Wow. What's, yeah. Wow. Wow. Yeah. So we can learn. We can learn these things. Now, when you were talking about being out in nature, if, well, I live in a city where, you know, there's concrete everywhere. Right. But there's still a park, perhaps.
Right, right. Look where the parks are. And that's one, another thing that's, I think, important to advocate for natural areas, wherever we are. That's really right. Important. If you love it and you're in a city, get involved in some way. You know, I like the idea of intergenerational a lot. So you could have older people taking younger people on hikes or seeing it. And they and there's a wonderful reciprocity there. And one thing she just said here, I think it's really... we think of, they call it neuroplasticity or brain, you know, regeneration only happens when you're young. They're finding, as she said, the brain has a remarkable ability to reorganize itself and make new synaptic connections and create new neurons or brain cells throughout your life. So there's a lot of positive things here about, I was learning about, you know, we're so terrified of Alzheimer's. We're so terrified. We think we're getting old and our brains are all deteriorating. There are things we can do, and a lot of that is not true about what we're fearful of. And so I think it's good to, once again, get a understanding so you can have a different baseline of how you're approaching what aging is with more confidence.
And I love that. You know, we do many shows here about experiential education programs here in Maine and all across the country of getting kids outside to really understand nature. You know, when you talk about volunteering, it's not for everyone, but it doesn't mean that you can't be part of some program. It doesn't mean even if you're not the volunteer, you could be the one, you could be the participant, you know, somewhere.
And I think that's really true. And I think one thing I found from interviewing Indigenous peoples, Native Americans, the idea is, again, of elders, that understand we have a responsibility. Our world is fractured now. It's hurting like never before. A lot of younger people are feeling hopeless. But we as seniors have been given more years than ever before, as it said in human history. Make that time count. Give back. And not only makes you better and healthier, but you're trying to aid this hurting world. And we can play a big role in that. And realize, as David Berrios in the book talked, we have an obligation to the younger generation. And that's what elders do.
So we also have this sense of, as you said, the neuroplasticity. We can train ourselves to be positive, train ourselves again to look at, wait, what have I accomplished? How do we reframe something, reframe a difficult situation? What did I learn? How do we do that? Now, we're not being cavalier. There are very difficult situations. And we also know, as you were talking about, people surviving the Holocaust or very difficult life situations and still living life.
And I think, once again, in your mindset, so important. One thing Elizabeth said, that people assume when you get old, you get frail. People assume when you get old, you're going to have pain. That's not true. Believe it or not, frailty, as she says, repeat, is not a necessary outcome of old age. There's things we have to do to keep from getting frail. So there's work involved. But she, like she said, so much so that the muscle mass of an octogenarian can surpass that of a 20-year-old if you're working that hard. We have the capability. She talks about one patient she had, and I heard him speak once, and he was nearing 80, and he was in a wheelchair. And he just had kind of given up on life. And so she said, well, let's see what we can do you know, getting you exercising and thinking of things that, oh, I can't, but starting small, a little Tai Chi here, a little yoga here, a little this, just starting small, started getting more and more, a little more encouraged, and finally had a goal. He said, when I turn 80, I want to ride 80 miles on my bicycle in 8 hours. And she said, and he did. And then he took his wife to Europe. Okay. So it takes work. Yes. And we aren't all going to be him, but it just shows that we have the capability to make life and aging a lot better than it is right now. And then it's going to be in this country. It's not going to be good for a lot of people. Right. A lot of different parts of our society age very poorly with poor health care. And that's, Elizabeth, we talk about in the book too, we aren't going to be successful unless we bring everyone with us.
So, yeah. So we're talking, we know this, that women of color have more difficulty in childbirth. There's a higher death rate, that some communities do not have adequate health care. And there's just, that's just those kinds of inequalities on that level have to be addressed. And people are. So we're talking about it, and it is being discussed everywhere. So yes, bringing everybody with us is so important. And so we have to talk about what is normal. So the muscle mass, do weight bearing exercises, exercise, the hearing, we talked about that, bone health, right? Men and women, this is all for everybody. Bladder health. Right. This is a big deal, right? Do we need to learn how to do pelvic floor issues? Keeping your an entire chapter on the pelvic floor for everybody. Interesting, right? We don't talk about that, but the heart changing muscles, the heart can get smaller, but if you've been exercising and have more innervation, then you've already increased your likelihood of success. And it doesn't have to be, you don't have to become an Olympian, do you?
No. Just even smaller steps can make a huge difference. But I do love the way in the book that she explains the different organs and different parts of your body, what's normal, what can you do to optimize, and give strategies we can do to improve. As you said, even your microbiota, what's a microbiota for Pete's sake?
Well, yes. Right. Well, actually, there is an entire school of Asian medicine and many medicines where keeping your gut healthy is one of the major ways of staying healthy. So we're talking about diet. Mediterranean diet is one that she mentions. There are certainly other things that people have had good success with, you know, seaweed for the minerals of bone health, calcium, magnesium, all of those kinds of things are really important. We also talked a lot about, and I just want to, again, if you have just tuned in, by the way, you are listening to the Healthy Options Program on WERU Community Radio. I'm Rhonda Fineman. We're speaking with Marcy Cottrell Houle, co-author with Dr. Elizabeth Ekstrom of The Gift of Aging, Growing Older with Purpose, Planning, and Positivity. Well, one area that we haven't discussed yet, there are two actually. One is this idea of the fear of death and what that means, talking about what all of us are going to experience. Take a breath. Yes, indeed. And the second thing is about financial health. Mm-hmm. And you have an entire lawyer accountant person giving a lot of ideas about what you can do to stay financially healthy, no matter what your economic, why you would need to have an estate plan, no matter what your economic situation is, and why you would need perhaps an ethical will to pass on things like your moral, your values, your what you learn through life that you want your family and friends to remember about you. But that financial piece, it starts in the 20s. This whole book has things, what to do in your 20s. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah, we hired, she's an award-winning estate attorney and works a lot with older people. And so she breaks it down, as you say, finances and all of that, starting in your 20s, decade by decade, what you need, what's important now, what's important in your 30s, what's important in your 40s, and builds on that. So when you finally reach retirement or beyond, you are not going to be like a lot of us Americans and just in real trouble. So that's very, very interesting.
Right.
You know, way of looking at this. So there's three chapters of hers in the book that really speak to younger people and older people how to prepare.
And it is important, you know, to talk about living wills, or do you need a trust for a family? And when we say that word, we're thinking of people with much, much money. But sometimes that's not the case, that you would want, you have a disabled family member you want to take care of. You know, one of my great, great friends was a very modest individual and did estate planning and was able to help her disabled sister even after my friend passed. And it was extraordinary. She was living a very modest life and yet had a legacy for her family. So, you know, all that kind of planning is really part of aging well, isn't it? And taking care. And that woman, Susan's mom, we should get her name. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Mary.
Right. She had done all of that and was able to pass things along.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you bring up the word legacy, because Bill McKibben talks about that in the book too. He writes that our legacy is the world we leave behind for the people we love the most. And he's like, the people we profile in the book testify that connection and relationship are keys to making these years the culmination of our lives. It's a privilege to be able to make a difference. That's our legacy, you know, and that goes until we die. And the whole idea, I go back to the main takeaway I asked Elizabeth once, and this book is like, aging is not a disease. It's a normal process. We tend to look at it as a disease. It's not something to be dreaded. Rather, it's everyone can continue to learn, to adapt and contribute even to the oldest age. And we have important work to do. So don't be afraid. But maintaining joy and a positive attitude and understanding can help you frame the challenges in a way that make it possible to overcome them.
So we have, this sense. I love that sense with, let's take that in for a moment. Like, yes, what you just said. Take that in. That legacy, the privilege of aging. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. You know, there was a time you were 65, you know, you got your watch. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it. We don't need you anymore. Right. Mm-hmm. We know that that's now people are living longer and are participating longer. This idea of the privilege of aging, it's a little bit of a responsibility, isn't it?
It is. And we can try to make our world a better place. And that was kind of my takeaway from this. Like, if we learn how to age well, it's going to take work. Yes, it will. We don't all want to exercise every single day. All these things are hard, or eat a certain way, or have to take classes, or do our music lessons, or learn a language, all those things. There's lots of strategies she gives. But if we do them with the understanding that we have an obligation, or we have a privilege to try to make the world better for those coming after us, that we're here in a certain time in human and geologic history that never before has been, we can make a difference. And we've been given that opportunity.
That really is, that is so huge. I love that idea of learn something new every day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, you could go back to school and get your PhD, or you could at least just, you know, learn, I don't know, a new flower, whatever, or learn something about yourself, learn something about your community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And keep it simple so you don't get overwhelmed. And it'd be easy to read these strategies and think, well, I can't do it. No, yes, you can. Just take little bits, you know, just take one little thing and then another little thing. I see this in one of my favorites in the book is Lucille Pierce, who's going to be 103. And she is perfectly amazing, but she's a calligrapher. She has beautiful, and she has been for 40 years. And she said, interesting in the book, all these people we interviewed said, oh, I'm nothing special. And yet in my mind, yeah, they are special. They don't see themselves like I'm not remarkable, but you are. So what is that? And so she continues to do her calligraphy, reaches out, goes on retreats still with her community of calligraphers. So it's just, but that creativity is really important. And that's a good part of your brain that is still there. You know, she talks about the different lobes and first in, first out, as we talk about. So you'll learn a lot about the brain. But I was encouraged knowing how plastic it is, and we can increase brain cells. And this idea that dementia that we're so afraid of, the incidence is going down. And you think, how can that be? What's that mean? We see everybody with dementia. Well, incidence means the percentage of people that are getting it as they get older. Prevalence is how many people have it. Well, we have a lot more people older, so you're going to have a lot more prevalence of dementia. But the actual, the key word scientists say, the incidence is going down, which is really hopeful. So there's some hopeful news throughout the book you can hold on to.
Yes, indeed. There are just so much, even if you're having a difficulty with dexterity, you can sing if you can. Oh, I'm not music at all. Well, listen to music or, I don't know, tell a joke. Humor.
Yeah.
Tell a joke.
Yes. Yeah.
And we know about music, you know, we just know about music bypassing many layers. If someone music therapy, people who have cognitive disabilities will respond and soften. Yeah. That sense of all the different senses that can be adapted. And you mentioned, we only have a couple of minutes, but just one idea of the training that some people are doing in nursing homes. What with the human...
Humanitudes.
Humanitudes. Let's talk about that just for a moment. Just talk about bringing in a lot of this into different care settings.
And you don't see that, once again, in the United States. This has been developed in Japan and in France. And Elizabeth brought them over, the two originators, and it's called Humanitudes. And this idea of giving people, whoever they are, respect, you know, and caring. And there's quite a story about this, that instead of just saying, most of the time you get older and you're nursing home and pop in, you may see a person 3 minutes. Here's a pill. Here's this. Here's that. That's so dehumanizing. Humanitudes is realizing we're all part of humanity. We want to not dehumanize, we want to humanize our relationships. And there's a different way we can treat elders who are sick. So I think it's a really important chapter because it's not happening here in America. I'd love to see
it. It needs to. Absolutely. Well, we're coming to the end. I want to just say, just from your wrap up at the end of the book, you talk about recognizing a positive event each day. It can be small as a good cup of coffee. Savor that event. Write it down in a journal. Create a gratitude practice. Practice mindfulness, be aware of your thoughts and shift negative thoughts, reframe events and your appraisal of them, recognize your personal strengths, work toward attainable goals, and practice acts of kindness. I think you summed it up. I just said what you said. We're coming to the end, but and we'll have websites and all sorts of connections. I just want to, once again, tell everybody that our guest today on Healthy Options has been Marcy Cottrell Houle, co-author of The Gift of Aging, Growing Older with Purpose, Planning, and Positivity. Thank you again for joining us.
My pleasure.
Yes. Pleasure. And this show and information that was mentioned will be posted. And you can find our previous shows with Marcy Cottrell Houle and her book, The Gift of Caring, Saving Our Parents from the Perils of Modern Healthcare. It's all archived. And you can get the WERU app and you can listen to it all as a podcast. Thanks, Joel Mann and Amy Brown of WERU for engineering support, Petra Hall for production assistance. And as always, thanks to all of our WERU listeners and supporters. This is Rhonda Feynman wishing you the best in health. Thank you so much, Marcy.